Good morning again. Thank you all for braving the blizzard to get out here today. It was terrible. Just that snow was falling and falling. And I mean, there had to have been at least, 2/16 of an inch of snow out there. So just be careful on your way home. Pardon me. That's something we don't do probably as often as we should. Can we just give a quick thank you to Bobby and Judy and Lorraine for being faithful and being here? And I know they're embarrassed. They're not. It's just nice to have such faithful servants to be here and to lead us in worship. So we should recognize them every so often, but not too often because then they'll get a big head. I got a call from Pastor this morning, from Audrey, and said that they unfortunately would not be able to join us this morning and wanted to know if I had anything. I said, sure, I've got like 10 things. So I've got 10 sets of notes here. Just bear with me. I'm going to go through them all as quickly as I possibly can. We should be done by no later than 4, okay? Does that sound good?
I'll be hungry by then.
We got food downstairs. You can smell it. It's just anticipation. You guys didn't sound too interested in that. I guess I'm going to narrow it down to just the first set of notes. since you're not interested in going through all 10 set of notes, go ahead and open your Bibles to Galatians chapter 6, please. Got a lot of great stuff I go through, and all kinds of stuff in the Bible. We've got stuff from Isaiah, stuff from Ezekiel. We've got stuff from like 4 different parables that Jesus taught. I mean, that's all good stuff. Don't you want to hear that this morning? No? Okay. Galatians chapter 6 it is then. I am going to warn you, a lot of you haven't seen me preach in a while, you may have forgotten I move around a lot. I don't like staying in one place. It just bores me. And if I get bored, I get off topic. And if I get off topic, we will be here till 4 o'clock. So just let me move around. Forgive me for that. I'm also going to warn you, one of you two guys are going to be helping me out later, so choose amongst you now. Commander Mike, can you choose for me? And thinking about a lot of the stuff that's been going on the past few weeks with Pastor Sermon, with Gary coming and sharing the words that he had and really revealing a prophecy that's been revealed here multiple times about the idea of this being a place of restoration, a place of healing. A place where people who have been broken can come and receive healing. A place where people who've been burned can come and receive restoration. A place where people who need the healing power of Christ in their spirit can receive that. I look through the Bible and I realize that there's just a word that I truly believe God needs us to hear as a church on how we can move forward into that prophecy, what our responsibility is. And starting there at the top of Galatians chapter 6, we have where Paul says, "Brethren, if anyone is caught in trespass, sin, brokenness, not being part of the church, whatever you want to call that, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in spirit of gentleness. Each one looking to yourself so that you will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ." It goes on and we're going to touch on a few other things there. But I think that's really the place that we are supposed to be starting is this idea of restoration in gentleness. I want to say that very, very clearly again. Restoration in gentleness. Because I think that's something that the church has not traditionally, historically, always been very good at. In fact, there's been times in church history where restoration and gentleness was as far from the vocabulary of the church as it's ever been in the vocabulary of mankind. Spanish Inquisition. I want to restore you to the church, so I'm going to screw things into your thumbs, you know. I want to restore you to the church, so I'm going to put you on a rack and just, make you about 6 inches taller. I mean, that was the point of the Inquisition, wasn't it? To restore them to the church. To get them to confess so that they could be restored and then killed in, sanctity and salvation so they can go to heaven. I mean, that was the stated purpose of the Inquisition. And I'm not so sure they actually read Galatians chapter 6 when they were setting up the Inquisition process. I mean, if it was, possibly the High Inquisitor might have looked at that and gone, I don't know, guys. I'm just thinking maybe the rack is not that gentle, folks. I know he's complaining about having a little bit of a hunchback, and we could straighten that all out, but it just seems like there's a better way to do this. You know, maybe other times in church history, and in fact, maybe in our own personal history, we've been restored through a little bit of a backhand of fellowship. You know what I'm saying, right? The idea of you've fallen down, you've failed in some way, and you have somebody reach out to you in love with the little backhand upside your face. It doesn't really make you want to run out and be like, I love Jesus, whenever a fellow Christian does that to you, does it? You know, in everything, I think it's a great idea to look at what Jesus does as our example. I mean, if we live our life, truly live our life the way Jesus did, then we're not really going to have a problem with this, are we? And in fact, the name Christian, I mean, that means follower of Christ, someone who patterns their life after Him. So I want to talk about a little bit, and did we get our volunteers decided over here? All right, Edward. Edward, can you run into that closet right there and grab a 6-foot step ladder? It's only this tall, not the really, really tall one. Please, just the 6-foot one. And bring it over here and set it up for me right here. While he's doing that, we're going to talk just very briefly. Jesus had so many encounters with people who were broken, people who had been cut off from the faith, people who were not accepted. In fact, he did it so often that the people of the faith rejected him because of that. They complained that you eat all your meals with all these sinners and heathens. But there's one story in particular I want to look at, and you guys might be able to think a little bit ahead and guess. Does anybody want to guess where I'm going with this? Zacchaeus, yeah, Zacchaeus. We know the song, right? Zacchaeus was a wee little man. I'm not saying that you're wee or little, Edward, but you're just going to help me out, okay? I would have gone with, you know, a littler person if they were here, but they're all downstairs. So, yeah, we'll just get this set up right there. And if you can climb up here for me, don't stand up here, though. Pastor can tell you firsthand, this is not a step for real, okay? Don't go past that. All right, just go up there for me for a minute. And No, one more step down. There you go. Perfect. Yeah, we don't want to go any higher than that because that's how Pastor broke his back. And, you know, I believe in healing and faith, and we can have a total demonstration of that right now if you want to, but let's not. That was another sermon, and I was told to skip that one. We're just going to do this one, okay? Anyways, if you're not familiar with the story, Jesus is going through town. There's crowds of people all around Jesus. They all want to be next to Jesus. In fact, Gary helped demonstrate that. Remember up here, he stood in here and had as many people as could crowd around him as possible. And, you know, Jesus was probably not the tallest man in the world. And in fact, that's probably not too far off of a life-size, you know, actual replica of who Jesus was. Jews, the, you know, nourishment and stuff like that was not, you know, top-notch like it is now. Average height was probably, you know, maybe 5'4". We're not talking extremely tall people. Zacchaeus, on the other hand, was noted as being even shorter than that. So he probably was much shorter than Edward was. And so all these people crowding around, and Zacchaeus was probably a little person. Put it that way, okay? He couldn't see Jesus through the crowds. He kept trying to push through, and everyone kept knocking him back. They said, you're not important. You're not valid. You don't have any right to be up here. Because Zacchaeus was a tax collector. And not just a tax collector. That was bad enough. Zacchaeus was not exactly an honest tax collector. And we all know that as much as we love everybody, the tax collectors are probably the people that we don't love as much as everyone else, right? Especially come around April 15th and we've got to write that big check. And it's like, you know, whoever's collecting this check, I just want to write them a nice little love you note. You know what I'm saying, right? So they didn't appreciate Zacchaeus because he was a traitor to his people. He was working for the Roman government. He was taking their hard-earned money, and he was taking more than he deserved to pad his own pockets and live a nice, wealthy life. They didn't want Zacchaeus around Jesus. He didn't deserve to be around Jesus in their eyes. And so Jesus, on the other hand, he saw Zacchaeus. And, you know, he's coming along, and Zacchaeus is up there in the tree. And Jesus looks up and sees him. That was a really interesting thing. Is first off, we get is Jesus sees Zacchaeus. I think it's an important note. That if we're just going through our life and we're busy and all these people are crowding around us and we're just focused on all this, guess what? We're never going to see Zacchaeus. You guys understand what I'm saying, right? Jesus was open to the Spirit. He looked up and he saw Zacchaeus. And then Jesus restored Zacchaeus. And you know, Edward, we're going to have just a little bit of a drama here. And I want to ask you a quick question after I treat you the way everyone else would have treated Zacchaeus. Hey, Zacchaeus, I know what you did. You're a sinner. You're a tax collector. You take advantage of all these people and you think you deserve to see me? Get down out of that tree and go back to your house. Edward, may I ask you, does that make you feel loved? Does that make you want to follow after me? Does that make you want to have anything to do with me at all? Okay. Just checking. You know, that's not what Jesus does, by the way, if you're not familiar. In fact, Jesus, you know, Zacchaeus is up there. He just wants to look at Jesus. He's not even expecting to ever talk to him. He just knows that somebody important is in town and is interested in seeing this person. Possibly one of the most important people that has ever walked through town. Definitely the most important person in Zacchaeus' life to ever walk through town. And Jesus comes along and he looks up and he sees Zacchaeus. That's the first thing he does. And he looks up to Zacchaeus and he says, Zacchaeus, get down out of the tree. I'm going to your house for dinner tonight. Now see, Zacchaeus, he's cast aside by everyone in town. Nobody wants anything to do with him, much less the rabbis, much less the priests, much less the Levites, the holy men in the community. See, this person who was a holy man, the holy man, looked at Zacchaeus and said, I'm coming to your house for dinner because I value you. You're important to me. Now tell me, is that someone that you want to follow? You can take that and put that away for him, please. Thank you, Edward. And especially thank you for not stepping on top of that top step that would break your back. You know, Jesus paints the perfect example. In fact, you look at his life time and time and time again, and he paints the same example. The Samaritan woman at the well, just the faithless centurion, all these people who should have been rejected. Jesus sees them and takes compassion on them. He sees them and restores them. See, after he has dinner with Zacchaeus, at the end of that encounter, Zacchaeus takes and returns everything he had stolen unlawfully. Sevenfold more. See, at the end of that encounter, Zacchaeus changed his life and decided he was going to follow Jesus. At the end of that encounter, Zacchaeus was restored in gentleness. We're called to do exactly the same thing. I mean, we read it right there, just in that passage. Restore them in gentleness. When they've fallen away, restore them in gentleness. When they've been caught up in their own sin, their own trespass, their own pain, their own brokenness, their own whatever it is that's separated from whom God is, restore them in gentleness. Speak love. Speak life. And there's one more thing I really want you guys to get, because we look at that and we think sometimes, well, that's just for them, right? I mean, we're only doing that for the other people. But there's such an important thing that Paul says in that passage. And if you're one to underline, there in the second half of verse 1. Each one look into yourself so that you too will not be tempted. Because how many times have we seen that where somebody... I just escaped out of my Bible here. Where somebody starts railing against the homosexuals, railing against the prostitutes, railing against the drug addicts, railing against whatever huge sin that they think that they need to rail against. They stand on their soapbox and they shout and they scream and they get people behind them. And then they fall off their soapbox into some serious muck of their own. How many times have we seen that? You guys know what I'm talking about, right? And I could go through and list famous people over and over and over again who instead of restoring in gentleness, decided that they were going to tear down the people that they should be building up and drawing in. And isn't it amazing how often they fight their own temptations and lose because they're so focused on tearing others down instead of looking to themselves and building others up? You guys know what I'm saying, right? I just want you guys to get that point before we move on. Restore others in gentleness, then look to yourself so that you don't fall into temptation. Back to what Jesus said, remove first that plank in your own eye before you can go and help your brother remove a speck from his. And the next part of that passage says that we are to bear one another's burdens. And this is all part of the first, very first point, by the way, restoring in gentleness. Because if we're busy speaking life into other people, and then we look at them and realize that they have this huge burden in their life. I mean, most people don't run from the church and have all these experiences without developing some kind of burden that they're carrying around. You know, maybe that burden is a financial burden where they're just overwhelmed by stuff and get sucked into things that they wouldn't want to be. Maybe that burden is a relationship burden where they're in a situation where they can't get out of it and they're torn down and the people in the church have written them off. Maybe that burden is just a life of making all the wrong choices and they're looking at their life going, I can't make the right choice anymore. I've done it wrong too many times, and there's no way that I can be fixed. There's no way that I can be restored. There's no way that I can even set foot in the church without bursting into flames. You know, and I've talked to people that's their mentality. That's the idea that they have in their head, is they're so broken so far, so hopeless, that even if they tried, they'd fail again. That's the burden they carry with them. Bear one another's burdens. See, the reason we can bear one another's burdens is because we all have a burden, don't we? And that burden burdens us. It weighs us down. It's hard to walk with. Who's ever been on a hike with Pastor? Has anybody been on a hike with Pastor? Who's carried a backpack on a hike with Pastor? Just a little one? If you ever carry a big one with a lot of water in it, because when you go on a hike with Pastor, you need a lot of water, because he's like, it's just another mile or two. That means 10 miles, people, just so you know. If Pastor ever says it's just another mile or two, just plan on at least 3 more hours of walking. Just plan on it. And that's to get to where you're going, then you have to go back. It's just the way it is. That backpack may not weigh a lot to start with. It may only be 10 pounds of backpack. That's not a lot of weight. We can carry around 10 pounds of backpack all day long, right? The problem is we can't. By the end of the day, 10 pounds, how much did your backpack weigh? Probably? Yeah, 3 pounds. So yeah, that's nothing. So let's drop a couple gallons of water into there. Yeah, it doesn't weigh much for a while, and then it starts cutting into your shoulders. And then it starts, I don't know about you guys, but it starts hitting me right about here, and I start kind of walking like this instead of like this. Then I start thinking, Pastor, are we going to die out here? Not literally. He won't take us that far. But I mean, it starts becoming a burden. It starts becoming a weight. That little bit of weight that you thought, oh, I could just carry this all day long. Next thing you know, a couple hours in, it's hurting. It's uncomfortable. It's painful even. See, Jesus says we all carry these burdens. And sometimes our burdens, it doesn't seem like a lot. But day after day, week after week, year after year, that burden becomes heavy. But Jesus says this, take your burden and give it to me, for it's light, for my burden's light. So I'll give it to me, and then take my burden on you. Be like going out hiking with Pastor, and you're carrying like this huge backpack with, 10 gallons of water in it. That would be a lot of water. Yeah. All this, and you got like a tent in there, and you got all this. I mean, you're like, I got the kitchen sink in here, Pastor. I'm ready for this hike. And Pastor's just looking at you going, you want to leave some of this stuff with the vehicle? I got this. It doesn't weigh much. It's only 80-pound rucksack. I'm good. Okay. Pastor, if you've ever been with Pastor, he's got this nice little light backpack for day hikes. And he's walking along, and about halfway through, you're just like, Pastor goes, okay, I got a plan. I can't carry two backpacks, but give me your 80-pound backpack and I'll carry that for you, and you can carry my little backpack. That's a pretty good deal at that point. You know, if Pastor did that, we would all be, thank you. It's important to realize the reason Jesus says, let me carry your burden, is because he knows we need to be able to share each other's burdens too. See, if we take our burdens, the things that are weighing us down, and we give it to Jesus and we find refreshment, we find joy, we find peace, we find all the stuff that we need, then we're good to go. And Monday morning we go to work and we see somebody and they're broken and they're hurting and they're crying. We don't have that burden on us anymore that weighs us down, that prevents us from going and helping them. Suddenly we're able to go to them and say, let me tell you, I'm here for you. I can help you. I'll support you. I'll do what I can. I'll help carry this burden for you so that you can take it to Jesus and give it to Him. You guys with me so far? You're not talking to me. I move around a lot. I expect you to talk to me because I'm down close to you. All right, point two. I'm going to move on and read this next section. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. For each one must examine his own work, and then he will have reason for boasting in regard to himself alone and not in regard to another. For each one will bear his own load. Didn't they just say share each other's burdens? I wonder what that means. When one is taught the word to share all good things with the one who teaches him, do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, he will also reap. For the one who sows in his own flesh will reap from the flesh of corruption. But the one who sows in the Spirit will reap from the Spirit eternal life. I just want you guys to get this idea that in our restoration to each other, it can become a burden to help other people. Especially when we start comparing our lives to each other, and that's what this is talking about. Don't compare yourself to each other. And that's what happens is we're looking at these other people and we end up looking at these people that we're helping and saying, I'm so much better than them. Anybody ever watch the Food Network? My wife and I, we will occasionally just, we usually record the shows that we watch so that we don't have to watch commercials, but occasionally we just, you know, it's like I'm done with my work, the kids are in bed, and, you know, all right, let's just turn on TV and see what's on. And 90% of the time, we turn on the Food Network. It's our guilty pleasure, I guess. Anybody watch the show Chopped? I love the show Chopped. If you're not familiar with the show Chopped, they have four chefs that come in. And most of these people are renowned chefs. They're executive chefs or sous chefs at incredibly famous restaurants, like four-star restaurants and all this stuff like that. And a lot of them come in really cocky. I'm going to win this thing. Nobody's as good a cook as me and all this other stuff. In this one episode, there's this French chef that comes in, and he is incredibly – he's an American chef, but he's trained French. I should be clear on that. He's not French. He's incredibly cocky, and I'm just going to show everybody some amazing stuff, and nobody knows how to cook anymore, and I'm just going to show them all these great techniques and talents, and da da da. And I'm just really looking at these other chefs, and he's like, these guys are terrible, they don't know what they're doing, I've seen their work, and I'm just really like, wow. And then he gets this first dish served to him, and it's like chopped steak and French fries and salsa, like jar salsa and something else. I can't remember what the other one was. And the guy looks at it and opens up and just his nose goes, this face of just pure disgust. And it's like interviewing him afterwards goes up and he just, I don't know, I just look at that and I'm like, I'm above this. Those were his words. I'm above this. And so he says, well, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I had to think about what I was going to do. And I'm like, how do I elevate this stuff, this garbage, this disgusting dish, to my standards? This is this guy's attitude about it. And so he makes this meal, and he mixes up mustard, like Dijon brown mustard, with salsa. Anyone think that sounds good? I mean, I'll try almost anything, but mustard and salsa, just, Those are not two flavors I think belong in the same sentence. It makes me gag a little bit thinking about that. And he mixed this up and presents it to the judges. And the judges were like, well, you were really creative and da-da-da, but I just can't get past this mustard and salsa. Those don't go together. He goes, well, but it's really classic in French food to have steak, mustard, and potatoes. He missed the point. Did not steak, mustard, potatoes, and salsa. He thought he was better than that. And he literally says, and one of the judges goes, what did you think when you got this? He goes, it was really low quality compared to what I'm used to work with. And the judge goes, yeah, we could tell. He compared himself to everybody else and thought they were inferior to him. He thought this food wasn't worthy of his standards. And yet he got chopped in the first round, despite the fact that in his mind, he was the best cook. Because he felt everyone else needed to come to his level. When we busy ourselves comparing ourselves to other people, we either look at them and say, you don't deserve to be near Jesus because I am the example you should follow first. When you get to where I'm at, then you can be near Jesus. When you live up to my standards, then you can be near Jesus. Once we start doing that, how quickly we fall. The other problem is we compare ourselves to other people and feel unworthy. Now, I'm sure nobody here does that ever, right? You start looking at some of the great people in your mind, these wonderful examples of faith, and say, I can't be that good. And if I can't be that good, I might as well not try. I'm going to tell you something really, really important. If you don't try, you can't be that good. Did you hear me?
Yep.
If you don't try, you can't. It will not happen. It is impossible. Now, you might try and you might fail over and over and over and over again. And that's not a problem. Because by trying and failing, you're getting better. You're learning. You're experiencing things and you're growing. When any great athlete started out, they didn't, you know, Tony, little three-year-old, let's say he grows up to be this great athlete one day. He's not out there playing, you know, high-end varsity football today, is he? he's not out there running, you know, the 100-yard dash in record times today, although if you've ever had to chase that child, you'd think he's approaching that record. No athlete was ever born a star athlete. Any athlete you ever talked to, they tried and tried and tried and tried until they got it. Until they made it. In fact, some of the greatest athletes ever were told they can't. One of my favorite athletes ever, most of you guys will appreciate what a great athlete Michael Jordan is. Some of you guys might look at him and go, well, he's nothing compared to the basketball players we have today. But we're not going to argue that right now. But Michael Jordan, if you know Michael Jordan's story, he was told he can't play basketball in high school. And he was just brushed aside, and he kept trying, he kept pushing, he kept doing, until finally he got on the team in college, and he showed everybody what he could do, and he became one of the greatest basketball players, and arguably one of the greatest basketball players of all times. And I remember one game where he put up over 80 points with a 104-degree fever. That's pretty impressive no matter who you are. You know, a lot of us know who Tim Tebow is right now, right? We all know who he is. I don't need to go and talk about him. You guys know that he was born early, and he was told that he wasn't going to be able to compete and do all these things. And he was homeschooled, and people tell homeschoolers, you know, you're not going to be this great athlete and stuff like that if you're in homeschool, because you're not going to be playing on the teams that have the best players and stuff like that. I mean, going into college, everything was against Tim Tebow. And yet, he rose up in college and became this great athlete in college, and goes up and gets drafted. And even Gary was looking at him when he gets drafted going, what are you doing drafting Tim Tebow? I mean, we don't need him. And yet the Broncos ended up needing him. And this year, Tim Tebow has been a household word, despite the fact that from birth, he's been told, you can't. He wasn't born a star athlete. He became a star athlete because he tried over and over and over and over again. And despite the fact that I'm sure he went and threw the ball into the dirt 1,000 times, I'm sure despite the fact that he got sacked 1,000 times in practice and on the field and all these other times, despite the fact that he failed, he kept going. He didn't look at himself and go, well, compared to these other guys in high school, I don't have a chance. People told him he didn't have a chance, but he didn't look at that and say that. When we compare our lives to other people, then we're going to fail. We're either going to look at them and think we're too much better than them, or we're going to look at them and think we're not worthy. But we are going to fail. Which brings us back to that idea of carrying our burdens, that of realizing that our life is our responsibility. It's not the responsibility for other people to take care of us. It's not the responsibility for them to come down to our level, despite the fact that so much of our educational system says that's what's supposed to happen. But I'm not going to go there today. Just giving you one sermon. How am I doing on time? Oh man, I'm beautiful for time. I have one more point. But I'm not done with this one. You know, the last part of this point, when we're looking at our own lives, is to realize that the stuff that we do, that's what we're going to reap. The stuff that we do, that's what's going to come back to us. And that's kind of what brings us back around to the end of this. And I'm going to tie these two points together real quickly. Is when we look at the lives of what's around us, we can look at our life and say, well, we're going to sow, we're going to do these things, we're going to, you know, make these great things and make a great name for ourselves. There's people that can do this stuff and make a great name for themselves. And that's their purpose. See, whatever they sow, they're going to reap. If they're going to sow in to make a name for themselves, that's exactly what they're going to do, is they're going to make a name for themselves. People will remember them for all of history. Pardon me, it's drying up here. I can think of a few names that we're going to remember for a good long time, for people that made a good name for themselves. Jimmy Swaggart, he made a name for himself, didn't he? Yeah? Then there's going to be people that they sow for the kingdom. And we may never hear their names. We may never know who they are. But what they reap is eternal. And this leads us into the last section there. I'm going to read this for you here as we close. Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people. I want to read that part again in case anyone missed that. Let us do good to all people, and especially those who are of the household of faith. Because it's so difficult when we look and say, well, I'm investing in the kingdom, but I'm not reaping. It's so difficult when we look at our life and say, I am working for God's kingdom, but I'm not seeing the growth that I expected. It's so difficult when we look and say, I'm trying to invest in the lives of these people around me, but they're not responding the way that I think they should respond. It's so difficult because we grow weary. Has anybody grown weary doing that? you do good and you do good and you do good. And after weeks and months and years, you look at your life and go, I've invested all I have to invest. I've got nothing left to give. And what do I have to see for it? And someone I know, they're really struggling with a lot of depression. They've been in ministry for longer than I've been alive. They've given and given and given and given. They've gone to little churches in the middle of nowhere. And all they've been able to accrue is debt. You know, they're in their 50s now and they're looking and going, at some point I'd like to retire. And yet we have a mountain of debt and nothing to go towards retirement. At some point I'd like to see the church that we're working in grow even a little bit. They're hours from anything. They have to drive 2 hours to get to the grocery store, the closest one, little one. If they want to go to a Walmart, they've got to drive like 3 or 4 hours. They're depressed. They're frustrated. They're just at the end of their rope because they're weary of doing good. They haven't seen the fruit of their labor. And it's a difficult thing because when we give and give and give for eternal things, that doesn't grow on our timetable. Sometimes we look at this and we say, well, I'm investing in these people's lives or whatever else it is, and I feel like I should see a change in my lifetime. But sometimes that change doesn't come, not in the way we expect to see it. Sometimes that change happens after we're already out of the picture. See, Paul also says this, some sow, some water, but God receives the increase. See, it's frustrating, it's difficult, it's weary, it's tiresome when we give and we give and we give and we don't see the change that we want to see. And we give and we give and we give and the youth group shrinks and shrinks and shrinks. It's frustrating. It's difficult. It's like, God, why am I working so hard to not see what I want to see happen? God, why am I working so hard to not see the growth, the fruit, the labor of all the stuff that I'm doing? But the truth is that God is the one that receives that increase. He just calls us to be faithful to do the good. When we take our eye off the ground, looking for that little bit of grass, the little bit of the flowering bud to grow, when we take our eye off of that and begin looking back at our Father, when we begin looking back at God, when we begin looking back at the goal, it becomes a different thing altogether. It's sort of like, again, going on a hike with pastor and you're walking towards a goal. I promise the goal is there. If you've ever been on the pasture, you might begin to lose sight of it, might begin to worry that you're never going to get there. Pastor, we've been walking for 3 hours. Where are we going? If you're looking down at your feet, I'm just going to watch where I'm walking so I don't trip and stumble. You're missing it. You know what you're missing, right? If you've ever been on a hike with pastor, he doesn't take you on boring trails that have no views. Whenever you're on a hike with pastor, he takes you to these trails that go up over scenic outlooks and all this other cool stuff. You're able to see some amazing things. But if you think the end goal for that hike is to get to some spot and turn around and walk back, that's going to get wearisome. That's going to get boring. That's going to get annoying. But if you're ever out there and you realize the goal is to be out in nature, the goal of that hike isn't to get to some place, to do something. The goal is to experience and to share that experience with pastor. That changes your perspective altogether, doesn't it? See, our goal is not to do all this work just for the sake of doing it. Our goal is not to restore in gentleness just for the sake of restoring in gentleness. Our goal is not to live this perfect life for the sake of living this perfect life. Our goal is and always has been and always will be God. So when we begin to get weary, when we begin to get tired, when we begin to get overwhelmed, when we begin to look at our life and say, Lord, I've been giving, I've been doing, and I'm not seeing anything happen, and I'm tired, I'm exhausted, and I'm overwhelmed. When we get to that point, that's when we need to take a step back and go, Lord, I need to take my eyes off of the stuff that I'm doing. I need to take my eyes off of all the things that I think are important. I need to take my eyes off of all that garbage and put my eyes back on you. To go back to the sermon Pastor spoke 2 weeks ago and then was echoed again with Gary. It was 3 weeks ago, echoed again with Gary 2 weeks ago. We need to get in that swimming water, that moving river, that life-giving water. We need to get into that and realize that working the banks, trying to clean up the banks where all the garbage gets pushed out to the banks, trying to get out there and do all that work, yeah, that's nice and that's good. But we got to get back into that water. We got to get back on target. We got to realize that our goal is God. And we focus on Him and do His work. It should be joy, whether or not we see the fruit of the increase, because we've kept our eyes on who He is. We can get the people that are going to be helping us with communion to step up, please. And our musicians, please. Told you I was closing with that point. You know, as they're coming up, I'd like to ask, just if everybody could, just for a moment, close your eyes, bow your head, just be really respectful of everybody around you. You know, I kind of shared some different stuff here, and really it comes down to four ideas. See, I figure that there's probably some people here who are in that weary space that I just talked about. Maybe you're not totally overwhelmed, running to the ground and have people trample all over you yet, but you're feeling there. You're feeling like you're getting to that point. You've been giving, you've been doing, you've been working, and you just feel like, I don't see anything happening from all that I've done. Maybe you're not quite ready to give up, but you're looking at it and saying, if I don't see something happen soon, I am going to be there. You know, today, as we take communion, I want to invite you in to take your eyes off of all the stuff that you're doing, all the good things that you're doing, and those are good things. And I want to invite you to take your eyes and just to look on God again. To take one more glimpse at that goal, our purpose, our reason for everything. So if that's you today, I'm going to ask you to raise your hand so I can see you, so I can pray with you. I know I'm getting weary. I'm tired. So I'm asking you guys to pray with me, to pray with Pastor, because I know it's wearisome to do all that. So if you guys just raise your hand so I know to pray with you. You know, some of you guys, maybe you thought about the example I was giving of looking at other people, and I don't know that anybody here looks at other people and says, I'm so much better than you. I think probably a lot of you look at other people and go, I'll just never be there. You see all the good that they do, and you begin to worry about, maybe I shouldn't even try. I'm not going to live up to that example. I'm not going to meet their expectations. Once more, I just want to invite you today to stop focusing on these other people. and to put your eyes on our goal, on who God is. And just work on that relationship with Him. And to remember that all He's ever called you to do is to try. So if that's you today, again, I just want to pray with you as we take communion. And I want you to come into that relationship with God and to focus on Him. So if that's you today, if you could just raise your hand so I know to pray with you during our communion. Thank you. I don't know if maybe there's somebody out here today, you're looking at your life and saying, I've been burned by the church. I've been burned by people in the church. If you're looking at your life saying, I've messed up and you don't even know what I've done. But you're hearing my words today and you're feeling that call from God. Know this, He's not here to tear you down. He's not here to beat you up. He's here to look at you and say, let's have lunch today. Let's just sit down and you can get to know me again. Because I love you. If you're hearing that call in your life today and you just want a part of that, you'd raise your hand so I can pray with you.